Hey everyone, I'm Dahlia.
And I'm Alma. This is Nightmare on Fifth Street, a horror movie podcast.
Okay, first of all, I seem to always want to comment on this, but I see little man over your shoulder right now, sitting very sweetly and patiently for us to either begin our conversation so he can listen in, or wait till the conversation is over so you and him can play. Who am I talking about?
Well, here's the thing is that I thought we were doing this with a live studio audience. That's why Chucky is sitting there. Like he's, you know, he's waiting for the sign that says applause and then he'll... If he fucking falls during this thing, that's it. That's it. He's possessed for real.
Oh my God. That's it. But he looks so sweet and so cute, just sitting there patiently waiting, like, Mom, I'm ready to cheer you on.
He is so poseable. And so I can put his hands in his lap very neatly and he can stand and I can put him in like walking positions and stuff like that because he's solid. Like his body is like has all these joints in them. And so he can look in any kind of position, which is always nice because he has a smile. But if it's in certain positions, then he looks kind of evil, especially when I was putting the knife in his hand.
Oh yeah, a knife in the hand will always make anyone look evil. Okay, so Alma, what movie are we discussing today?
We are talking about the 2019 movie Ma.
Ma. That's how I always think of it, like Ma. Okay, so this movie is the short summary: a lonely woman befriends a group of teenagers and decides to let them party at her house. Just when the kids think their luck couldn't get any better, things start happening that make them question the intention of their host. Right off the bat, that's creepy. I mean, it doesn't even have to be a horror movie. That's just creepy. Grown woman inviting the teenagers back to her house. This is why, oh my God, sometimes you look back on your own childhood and wonder, how did I come out of that? We make stupid decisions as teenagers. I'm sorry, we do. All teenagers are stupid because I was stupid, because you were stupid. We were all stupid as teenagers.
We did.
I'm sorry,
things.
Teenagers. I'm sorry. It's true.
I'm wondering who doesn't. And I know that it's like it's on levels, right? A lot of things that we do are so simply stupid that it could put our life in danger. And then there's things that are like really huge and really stupid that does nothing to, you know, scare us or doesn't endanger our lives whatsoever. And this movie, when I saw the previews to it, I cringed so hard at the thought of an adult woman hanging out with teenagers. It was so cringy that I
this
avoided watching
the movie.
This movie
was all cringy. Did you really avoid it?
Yes, because of it. And it wasn't as bad as I imagined it to be. I thought I was going to be squirming the whole time. But just think about it. I mean, we know this situation. We've heard about it in the news. You've known people who try to think that they can be a friends with an adult and you're like a teenage child. You're a child. You don't have anything in common with an adult. Oh, the thought of it is like, it's so fucking creepy. It's really creepy. So I think it made a really good idea for a movie, you know?
Yeah. It was just like, because it's so cringy. See, I cringed the fuck out during this movie. I was just like, I can't take it. Sometimes I had to get up and walk and turn my back to the movie. Because for some reason, sometimes I can listen to dialogue and as long as I don't watch it, it's not as cringy. It's still cringy, but I can get through the moment. And so many a moment I had to get up and turn my back to the TV because I'm like, I just can't do this. I just can't do this. So, okay, Alma, who is in this movie? Who's it written by, directed, all that good stuff?
Okay, so we have Scotty Landis wrote the movie, the screenplay, and directed by Tate Taylor. It stars Octavia Spencer as Sue Ann. You know, everybody knows her. And so I was like, I felt bad about not watching this movie right away because it was like, this is a great, but it's so creepy. Okay, I'm moving past it. Diana Silvers as Maggie, Juliette Lewis as Erica. She was really good too. This has a very big cast and I think everybody played their roles really well, even with some of the teenage friends that they didn't really do a lot. But there's really great actors in the movie. Michaela Miller as Haley. Allison Janney just randomly plays a doctor in it. She's like the vet.
I like the way you said that, just randomly plays a doctor,
because it's like these people have like all these big awards and then she's just playing like the vet chilling in the back, you know, taking care of dogs. And it's like, it was just a really random role to see her in. We have Corey Fogelmanis as Andy, Luke Evans as Ben, his dad, Missy Pyle as Mercedes, Dante Brown as Daryl, Gianni Paolo as Chaz. So a really like a good ensemble cast, some people with little minor roles, some people with random roles.
Roles like Alice and Jenny, apparently. Okay, so Alma, where did you find it? I don't remember. I think I rented it.
I rented it. I didn't see it anywhere else. I went ahead and got it off Prime because I thought it would be other places. And I've seen it other places, but I guess right now it just wasn't. So I just rented it.
Okay, that must be where I got it too. I like that feature. I think I've mentioned it before on a lot of these smart TVs. If you do just a broad search on the smart TV versus going to an individual platform, you can see where it's playing. I mean, where you can get it and whether it's free. And I don't think I found this free anywhere, unless it's on one of the apps that is not on my thingy. Because I even have Tubi there, so Tubi will pop up as an option for me. But anyways, I see. Okay, so. Alma makes these really cool notes for me because I'm bad with names. I've mentioned that before. I've always been bad with names. And so she writes these funny little notes beside people so that I can remember who they were, like Juliette Lewis, Maggie's mom, Michaela Miller, teenage friend, Allison Janney, vet boss. My favorite one is Missy Pyle as Mercedes, bitch old friend.
She was a bitch. That way automatically, right, you know who that was in the movie, right?
It's like, yeah, well, I love them. I appreciate them very much.
I would have put more descriptive, but it was like, I, you know, the teenagers and the adults is really who you need to separate. Now, before discussing the movie, I would like to discuss the elephant in the room. What do you mean, the elephant in the room, Alma? Is that the correct expression? We were just talking about misusing expressions. So I hope that's right.
Yeah, I'm pretty sure it is.
Octavia Spencer playing the villain in this movie with a lot of roles that she's done that I think it's very important to mention that we don't like to see our people of color, women of color, playing villains in movies, because a lot of time we are left with the roles that aren't the starring role. This one's a starring role, so that's great. But we don't like to see us portraying, you know, or especially great actors playing a villain in horror movies, playing the first person who dies, playing the sidekick best friend, playing the service workers, that kind of shit. But in this one, it's very important to note that this movie came together specifically because of the relationship, like their friends, the director, right? The director's friends with Octavia Spencer from working with a couple of movies with her. And it was her that really wanted to be in this movie and play a different kind of role. So she wanted to be a villain, which is... Yeah. Yeah, so that's like really good, important to note.
I think it is important to note, because I was reading some trivia on this. And it was originally written for a white actress. So when I read that, though, first of all, I'm like, how is it written for a white actress?
Yes. How is a role written for a white person? Isn't it just written for a person? Therefore, it has to be white.
But the only thing I can think of is like maybe in their head, they had pictured a couple of people playing the role and they happened to be white. That's the only thing I can think of, because that's such a weird thing to say. But the director, because they're good friends, he brought the script to Octavia, like we're on first name basis here. Me and my friend.
Octavia, you know.
And like to consult with her. And I guess she the input and the she she wanting to take part in it. And then they tweaked a few things to make it more right for her. So you're right. I think that was important to note, because she is the bad guy in this. And she's so, not only the bad guy, but she's just so wrong. She's just creepy. So wrong.
A creep.
In everything.
I got my youngest to watch this with me somehow. And it was interesting because she said, I thought this was going to be so cringy, I was going to have to walk away. But she said, but Ma was she doesn't know who the actress is. It was like, it was so good that I wanted to see her, even though she was like such a creep. And so I'm like, see, she did really. Yeah. You look at her and she starts off so like nice and friendly looking.
Yeah.
Like this is somebody who I'd be friends with, somebody I'd work with, just regular
maybe on the side, but like the way she starts acting with the kids almost right away for me, she seemed kind of sad and pathetic. So anyways, the way it starts is teenager Maggie Thompson and her mom move back to her mom's hometown after Maggie's father left the mom. So at the new high school, Maggie befriends a couple of people. And right away, of course, when you befriend people, it's always like the cool kids or the kids that are going to party. It just seems like that. And it's like a trope in movies, you know, like, oh, let's make friends. And right away, the friends, they become fast friends because they all go out and party. So that's what happens here. And and Maggie starts developing a crush on one of the boys. Ooh. But it's like they're actually a cute couple, actually, now that I think about it. But that'll come into play later. So what's one of the things they want to do? Because they're teenagers, unlike other movies where they just magically appear with all this booze. In this case, they need to acquire the booze somehow. So like idiots, they sit outside a liquor store and they start asking anybody who comes by to buy the stuff for them. Or maybe it's not a liquor store, it's just a store, whatever. But they just start asking everybody, hey, can you buy me this? Can you here's a list. They have a fucking list. It's so funny. It's kid-like. It's so innocent.
Yeah, I don't think I've ever gone with a list into a liquor store.
Yeah, I don't think so either. It's just like, maybe sometimes it would have helped when I like, shit, I forgot this for the that.
Yeah,
but anyways, so so they come across Ma. I already forgot Ma's name. What is Ma's name?
Sue Ann.
So everybody was telling them no because duh. And Sue Ann is the one who says, sure, I'll buy it for you guys. And, you know, yeah. And then they start clicking from that point on. But clicking?
Well, I don't think so. She did it. I'm just going to say she did it because she noticed the name on the kid's van, which is Hawkins. And she recognized the name Hawkins as somebody she went to high school with. So I think her only motive here was to get the liquor for them and then report them to get them in trouble as a kind of payback for what we don't know yet. But I think that was the only thing she was trying to do. And when it didn't work, then she's like, I'm going to start stalking these kids on the internet and befriend them to fuck them over.
Okay. That's interesting that you saw it that way. I saw it differently. I saw her because that's what happened. She recognizes the name on the van of one of the kids and thinks, okay, I recognize that name. That must be the dad. And I have a past with that dad. And what she ends up doing is she calls the police on the kids because she knows where they're going to go drink. And I didn't see it as, you know, getting one over on the dad or the kid. I thought it was right away from the beginning, setting up so that she can get her claws on these kids and get them to come back to her place. Cause that's what ends up happening. They can't drink over at that, whatever they call them before. It was some outside area or whatever, you know.
Oh yeah. Cause they weren't going to want to go back. Yeah, that's true too. That's true.
So that's how I saw it, that this was her way of offering up her basement. Oh, look at that. Y'all can drink safely in my basement since you have nowhere to go. And she makes up that whole lie. I'd rather you be, and it's kind of like the cool mom. I'd rather you be drinking here than somewhere else where I can kind of keep tabs on you.
Yeah, I hated those. I'm not the cool mom because that's creepy to me. I don't want to be the drunk mom that you hang out with. I don't ever, because as a mom, I do not want to be a creeper. I'm always aware that I am a parent and I'm not your friend. That is, yeah. So it was weird right away because I don't even want to spend time talking to somebody who's outside of my family, you know, even my kids' friends or whatever. It's like, I'm just going to go in that other room until somebody else is in there with you. Cause I don't know. It just looks bad, right? It's either the cringe. I'm feeling the cringe. I'm feeling it so bad that I'm like sitting here picturing it and it's making me curl. Ew, talk about something else.
Okay. So, yeah. So she starts getting the kids to come over to her house and right off the bat, she's creepy. The kids start picking up on this whole vibe from her, like, oh, she's kind of pathetic. And, you know, it's kind of, you know, sad, pathetic kind of thing going on. She does this one thing though, where I don't remember how it came to this point, but she grabs a gun from her basement that's just randomly in a box or hiding behind a box or something while the kids are there, and she points it at one of the kids, one of the boys. They're teenagers. I keep calling them kids because in the movie they're playing teenagers. Yeah, sorry,
they're kids.
Sorry, I'm not trying to offend anyone. But,
no, but it's opposite because we're very much making the distinguishing point that she's an adult, they're minors, they're children, you know.
Right. So she points it at one of the teenage boys and she points it at him and everybody's freaked out. And she changed her whole demeanor. Before it was like very friendly, very, oh, look mm-hmm. at me, I'm just taking care of you guys. And then all of a sudden she's like very authoritative and she tells him to strip. So he takes off his shirt and then she's like, she makes him keep stripping. And I'm sorry, I should have done a trigger warning before this, but she's a grown woman who makes a teenage boy strip. And he did. With the gun to his head, face. And then she starts laughing and saying, oh, just joking. This thing doesn't even have bullets. I found it in my basement. And all the other kids start laughing. And I'm like, how is this a joke?
Everybody laughed. And then they just are like, fine with it. That is not okay. That was the biggest one because it already shows her grooming behavior. So it is like she's trying to gain their trust and does something so startling that it's almost like a test. Are you going to think this is funny and cool and not tell anybody? Or are you going to go tell somebody that I made your teenage friend strip down to his underwear? I mean, he was completely naked. He covered his area. So it was so much. Like, has anybody ever jokingly pulled a gun on you? That's such a serious.
Do we have to answer that?
Well, I'm going to tell two.
Two times. I'm just saying, yeah.
Yeah, it happened to me like two times that somebody thought it was funny, but I never hung out with those people.
They thought it was funny. There.
Yeah, and it was one of them was an adult, and the other one was like a teenager that I was like, that ain't cool. That's not fucking funny. And that was so bizarre in the change of character that at least one of them started to see that this is peculiar behavior, like Maggie, the new kid. But also as the new kid, I think that's what made it a perfect scenario for the movie because she's more trying to go along with everybody else to try to stay in the new friend group. And because she has the crush, that she was willing to go along more with the crowd, not willing so much to just exempt this behavior from this woman, but more, I want these friends and I like this kid, kind of. Yeah.
And I just want to reiterate again, sorry about that, but the trigger warning for sexual abuse of teenagers, a girl is tricked into performing a sex act. And as we just said, a boy is forced to strip nude at gunpoint. And my doggy's just going crazy, stretching behind me. She's all like, she's ready to go outside or something. I'm just going to have to ignore her for a little bit. So anyways, Alma, so what's going on next? What's going on after this? They all think it's hilarious and we're just going to keep on partying down here.
Yeah, they start to have parties and invite more people to come. Now, the thing is, before the next thing where they decide they've had enough. Maggie's mom is Juliette Lewis in the movie and she is kind of like in a sad situation because she ran off to be, well, I'm not going to say run off, but that's how it was portrayed in the movie. She marries somebody and leaves this small town. And finally, she is back in this small town, which kind of puts them in the situation where she's going to meet people that she used to know. One of those people that she bumps into is a guy she knew from high school. That's Ben, who is her daughter's crush's dad. And then he has a girlfriend who I wrote down as bitch old friend, who is drunk at a casino that she works at. And not the bitch friend. Maggie's mom is the one that works at the casino. And she decides to
Is Juliette Lewis, my favorite. I want to just stop, pause for a second. How much I love Juliette Lewis.
She's and then so I'll good let in this go one. I've seen her in a lot of movies too, where it's like a smaller role, not the starring role, but she gives it like 100%, like every damn time. And so in this one, it was a really sad moment because that chick decides to try to humiliate her for working there and having to come back to the small town.
Fuck you. Yeah, she was really your ass here. Yeah. Being kicked out of a casino and you have the nerve to make. Yeah.
And then when you have a significant other who is making an ass out of you and themselves, I don't think much of that person either, which is Ben. You know, he leaves her a tip and says, sorry. And Maggie's mom is left like in tears, you know, and it was really sad. And I felt a lot of that in there, coming back home, trying to start anew. And you're killing it because she's like the single mom working for the daughter and everything like that. So it was a shitty situation. And then we have her daughter who is being basically groomed by this woman to hang out and do God knows what. So she is in a party and this is when things, you already noticed that the weirdness and strangeness of Sue-Ann. They start calling her Ma. She is inviting them after school. She's at their school. And it's like, what are you doing here? Well, come on, let's go drinking. And it's so awkward. And she starts to look jealous. And she is jealous because of the, she's like caressing some of the boys and touching them. And
it's so wrong. It made me feel uncomfortable, even though I know it's just a movie. Uh-huh. And even though I know that everybody's adults and, mm-hmm. you know, it's still, there's just
they did
that
a good
level
job
of
creeping us out.
They did. And I'm trying not to fixate on it, but that's part of what this movie is about, that she's overstepping these bounds and doing shit she shouldn't be doing. Because even if it was quote unquote innocent, and just mm-hmm. letting them hang out in her basement while they drank, it's just,
it's still something you should never do.
Wrong way.
Yeah. Exactly. So Maggie ends up getting drugged and wakes up in the morning and she is at home and doesn't remember. And she goes to tell her new boyfriend, because now they're going to go out and everything, that how did I get home? And he makes up some shit and it's basically, no, you went home, you were fine. But it's obvious to us that this woman drugged her to get her out of the way to do whatever. And her earrings are missing. And that's what they first notice, is like little things that are missing from them. And
she's stealing from them.
And so they're like, let's go break into her house and see what's up. And they break into Ma's house and they find a girl in there. And they're like, who the fuck are you? It's a student from their school that Maggie had met before.
The first day of school, she met a young lady who I believe at the time was in a wheelchair.
Yes.
And then we don't see her again. I thought she was going to be a huge part of the movie because the way they started in the beginning, like, is this a girl she's going to become friends with? And then she's going to dump them for her new friends. That's when I first saw her. That's what I thought. But no, we just didn't see her again until now, way later in the movie. And it turns out it's Ma's daughter. What the hell?
She had a kid in the house the whole time. She's like, I hear you guys in the basement having fun is with her mom. That was so fucking weird. And she's like, I can't go back to school because my mom said I'm too sick to go to school. But she's standing up. It's like, I saw you in a wheelchair, though. She goes, I can't walk for very long. And it's like, that's when we noticed some of the things during the movie that were odd. Like she had medication and syringes that she had pulled out. She didn't want anybody upstairs. All that was just to cover up the fact that she has a daughter. So is she bullying her daughter? Is she drugging her daughter to keep her out of the way. All those questions start, like, what is she doing to her daughter? Is her daughter really sick? Is she keeping her sick? So, now we know this Ma isn't somebody we want to be with. And they all decide they're not going to hang out with her. So what does she
do? Not only that, but Maggie told her now boyfriend, it's like, please don't go back to the house. Promise me you won't go back to the house. And he promises her. But you, like you were just about to say, what do they all end up doing after this? They all end up back at the house partying, except for Maggie.
But this is why. Because remember, she made up the thing about having cancer.
Yeah.
The reason specifically she came up with, I have cancer, therefore my behavior is odd and I'm sorry. And then they feel bad for her. So they go back to have a party without Maggie. Is because Maggie's new boyfriend, Andy, is that his name, Andy? Well, her boyfriend,
I don't know.
his mom died of cancer.
Yeah.
That's why.
He feels really bad.
Yes.
He's like, my mom acted weird before she passed away from cancer. So that's how he excuses Ma's previous bad behavior. And that's really shitty. That's such a fucking shitty thing to do, because she knows that mom died of cancer. She has a thing going on with the son of a guy that she once had a crush on. It's all so fucked up. It's so sick.
Yes, we're
gross.
Getting flashes. So, you know, it's bigger than just her hanging out with these kids. She has pictures of them. They show her going through their Facebooks. She's printing the pictures that she finds of them on the internet and their social. Yeah. She has their phone numbers, but they kind of like just brush away the fact that she has their phone numbers. And meanwhile, she has this job as a vet tech and she's not good at it. Like,
and that's where Alice and Jenny is in the background randomly. Yeah, just
like, do your fucking job. Get off your damn phone.
She's literally telling her that. She literally tells her. How would she have that job if she's really shitty at the job? I'm sorry, yes. The Ma is not a great vet tech. She isn't.
No, she's spaced out. She's bitching at the dogs like an asshole. And just she's obviously not good person, because at the fundamental level, we would have noticed that this woman is in a position to take care of our most vulnerable, our pets, and treats them awful. She's a terrible human being, but we don't, like, what is it? Is there something in her past? And we keep seeing her flashes to high school and having a crush on Ben and a friend that looks like they're being nice to her and telling her to do things. And that's where the trickery comes in that they did, which is just trickery. They were just assholes and bullies, all of them. And
exactly.
Yeah. And well, so
there is that part where Maggie's mom brings in the cat. I walked away for a minute, so you may have mentioned this. Sorry, I had to let my dogs out. So Alma mentioned this already. I apologize. But the part where Maggie's mom brings in her cat to, which this cat just came out of nowhere. I don't think I remember seeing it in the background at the house.
Was it a dog?
I don't know. She brought in a cat because it was the little tiny, it was the little carrier. She brought in her cat.
Oh, no, that was Ben. Ben had the cat.
Mm-hmm. Well, Maggie's mom brings in an animal.
A dog.
So a dog. Okay. Sorry about that. Maggie's mom brings in. That's how much I don't remember. Cause there was all these cute animals. It was cute animal galore. But so she brings in her animal, and that's where they, you know, she's like, oh, I'm just going to leave, you know, I'll fill out the rest, blah, blah. And then all of a sudden, we were friends and we're friends again. And now we're talking and for some reason, Maggie and Ma pretend they've never met each other. Mm-hmm. It's like, I mean, I get why, because Maggie didn't want to get in trouble. Like, hey, I've been drinking in Ma's basement this whole time. And Maggie didn't want to, I mean, and Ma didn't want to seem like a creep right away. But it was just so awkward, that whole interaction when, I mean, she did it on purpose. She's there at her house trying to show her, like, who's in charge here. But at the same time, she's there because she's trying to get this in with the mom so her fucking plan can really get fucked up. I don't know. It's just like,
to kick things overdrive. In the end, like, after watching the whole movie, I was like, what? I wonder if this was like a snowball effect of her trying one thing. That's why I thought in the beginning that she seriously was just trying to rat on the kid. Is this a snowball effect that she did here, or was her from the beginning seeing them go, I'm going to do some wicked shit, not just little shit. I'm going to do some real fucked up shit, because She is doing way so much and pretty much getting away with it until Ben comes to her and is like, hey, let's go out for drinks, and presents that I know my son has been at your place because I track him, because he's, you know, he owns that security company. And
well, also
so
he doesn't trust his son. I mean, from the beginning, we saw that.
He's like, he called the cops, who is the director, right? The cop played the director, or director played the cop in the movie.
Yeah, he called the cops. I mean, that's one thing. I get it. You're trying to teach a lesson to your son. But not only that, he called the cops on your son. But then the cops, like, when the cop went, this was in the beginning. Remember when we said that Ma called the cops on them? So, told them, but you know what I mean. Anyways, my whole point is that the cop said, I know who your dad is. He wants me to arrest you, but I hated him in high school, or something like that.
Yeah, so, everybody tells you he was a dick in high school.
He was a dick in high school. So this is what happened. We've been seeing flashbacks of what's been going on. And so the reveal is finally that Sue-Ann, who is Ma, had a crush on Ben, who was the dad of Maggie's boyfriend. And this is a really sad part. She was deceived into performing oral sex on a boy she thought was Ben. And Ben had gotten the school somehow to witness this assault. And for some reason, everybody that was there just thought it was the funniest shit in the world. Mm-hmm. I'm sorry, but it's sad. It's really fucking fucked up that this happened to. As a matter of fact, there comes a line later, we'll discuss that, where Ben, now as a grown adult, tries to use the excuse that I was a kid, or we were kids, or something like that, trying to excuse the behavior of what he did to her. And then she comes back with the line that really made me sad, though. She goes, well, so was I. And like,
yeah, that was really good.
Yeah.
It hits home on so many levels. Yeah. I read that some of the criticism for the movie was the portrayal of the teenagers in the film. And I'm like, those teenagers couldn't have been written more real, as to that kids can be shitty. We see it every day. You know, it's a serious topic, so we can get serious. But we see it all the time. Kids can be, adults can be bullies, but we're talking specifically about the teenagers here. You can be shitty. You can be nice. We make excuses that we're not fully developed, all that kind of stuff. But kids and teenagers can be really fucking shitty, and they do messed up shit. And in the end, after watching this movie, I'm like, how do you even make amends for that? How do you even come back from doing something so awful to somebody? But at least an apology could have come in.
Acknowledgement of some sort.
Acknowledgement of shitty behavior, instead of just saying, we're kids. That's not an apology.
Exactly. Exactly.
That wasn't an apology. We see so many people making public apologies, and they're just excuses, instead of, I apologize. I was fucking wrong and I was terrible. And that's the end of it, man. And her plan here is she is going to fuck up these kids.
So that's the shitty part, though, because when she was a kid, she had something really horrible and shitty happen to her. And up until today, I can see how that could affect you, the way you act, all that stuff. But everything she did that involved the kids from the second that she saw them and on to the end of the movie, that is 100% on her. Because she involved the kids.
They didn't do anything. That's what
no.
I was talking with my daughter about it, because I was like, they weren't even mean. They were like, you're cool. And they gave her the cool nickname Ma. And they were nice to her, even when they thought, you know, she's just lonely or whatever. They didn't make fun of her. They didn't ridicule her. They just accepted that she was this cool older woman who was helping them stay out of trouble. Like, they accepted her at face value for what she said. So they weren't shitty. Their parents were shitty. The adults previously were shitty to her. But she didn't see that. She didn't see that. She just saw them as targets.
Exactly. Because they were an extension of the people who did this thing to her. So now everything's starting to get ramped up here. We see Mercedes, that's the bitch, old bitch friend that Alma said. We see her jogging in the road, and fucking Ma just decides to run her over. She just
It was so shocking. It was out of nowhere. Just ran her over. Just plowed her the fuck over and just kept driving. That was so like shocking because up to that point, we're just seeing creepy, weird behavior. And then all of a sudden, she just fucking killed that lady. No chance of being alive.
Yeah, that's fucked up. We also find out that she killed her boss. Poor Allison.
She's in this movie to just tell her she's a shitty employee and then she's killed and thrown in a kennel. And we don't even see it.
Exactly. That's what I was just thinking about it. Because we don't see the murder at all. We see her body weirdly crammed into the kennel. I thought it was. And at first I was like, is that her? Because it was just so random and weird.
It was in the background. Uh-huh. Crammed like, in there.
And then she lures Ben back to her house and knocks him out and then ties him again. This could be a trigger warning here because she ties him to her bed naked. And that's where she starts to assault him and hurt him and all this stuff. And again, everything you could say, everything was deserved and all that, but some of this stuff just still makes me like, it hurts to look at. Like, that's so
she gives wrong. Him dog blood. She gives him a transfusion of dog blood and then slits his wrist to kill him. And it is the plan here.
It's the plan is so weird because in all of this, she also decided to have the kids over again in her basement, somehow convinced them to come back to her house. And she had a party for everybody. They're all getting drunk, but it turns out they probably weren't even that drunk because she poisoned them. She drugged them. So now they're all passed out and she ties them up. She has them all tied up again, mm-hmm. regardless of what these other people did to her when she was a kid. These are kids.
Why didn't anybody notice that she purchased these dog collars and chains and everything and she steal them all from work?
She probably stole them all from work.
Yeah, she stole the drugs from work, which now we can put two and two together. That's what she's been shooting up the daughter with. Dog drugs. What the hell is wrong? Why was she doing that to her own daughter?
Who knows? Because she was doing that to her own daughter before this whole situation, you know, unfolded before her. Like, she thought she could take advantage of this. And so she has to, she takes this opportunity to, she's doing inappropriate things with the boy here. And it's just like, it's so uncomfortable to watch.
Yeah, because I think when we're saying it, it even makes it sound worse because it's really just worse or not at all. With the situation, the touching of them, and then she's taking pictures of them, and then she's like burning them and torturing them while they're all kind of drugged and unconscious except for Maggie. And it's like, why is Maggie the focus of all of the most of the aggression, most of the anger at this point? Because she's awake, she's letting her watch what she's doing to the other teenagers. She's torturing them. She's keeping them. And the whole time too, I'm wondering, are they dead? Or are they like completely drugged up and passed out? And there's even like a random friend there that had nothing to do with any of it and was there as well. And it's just, this is the grand finale. She hangs Maggie. And it's like, is this going to be it? Is she going to slowly just kill everybody after all the little tiny things she did to everybody? Maggie is just dangling there, choking, and someone comes to her rescue. The poor daughter. Yeah. Comes to the rescue. And that part is really great because it's like, she knows what her mom's doing is wrong the whole time. And now that she's been made aware of it, she saves Maggie. And but also in the meantime, the mom realizes where Maggie's at. Everything comes together here. Like, they're going to show up. A cop gets shot. It's just, everything is just completely out of control. There's no coming back. There's no coming back. I was like, Ma, was your whole end goal here to kill everybody and just go out in a blaze of glory? Because I don't think she had an escape plan here. She didn't care. She dragged that cop inside after they shot him. Maggie's mom is totally aware where you're going to be because she already knows that you were manipulating her. And of course, she's going to come look for her daughter. So it was kind of like, I think she was going to take everybody out. She was going to take everybody out.
And then, of course, the ending, Ma just walks upstairs to a deceased Ben and lets the fire take up with her.
Them next to him. It was funny because when they show her walking through the flames, kind of like she's not shown like in the fire, but she's walking because this fire got started and everything. But I was like, is she imagining herself walking upstairs to go lie down with Ben? Or did she really get up after she was stabbed and go up the stairs?
She had just enough energy to get her ass upstairs and curl up slow with a deceased man who she was responsible for killing. And she did go out in a blaze of glory, Alma.
I guess so. Out in
blazes for sure.
Maybe she pretended that she wasn't screaming the whole, like maybe she did get up all painfully screaming because she's bleeding out and on fire. She walks up the stairs and she was just imagining that she slow walked up there instead of on fire, running up the stairs, spreading the fire everywhere.
Okay, so I did want to share a little bit of trivia from the movie. Some things for example, there is a scene where we had talked about where Maggie and her friend came to the house to look at stuff, to try to find out more about what was going on with Ma. And when the daughter walked in on them and everything like that, when the two girls were gone and it was just Ma and her daughter, Ma noticed that some porcelain dolls had been moved into porcelain cat statues. And that was an homage to Misery, where she knew that somebody had, you know, been walking around where they shouldn't have. There's also a really cool scene where Erica, that's Maggie's mom, she's laying on the couch and she mentions that she's having a John Hughes movie marathon and invites Maggie to stay with her. Well, Juliette Lewis had a part in a Hughes-written movie, and that was Christmas Vacation, where she played Audrey. I always love how Audrey's a completely different actress in every single one of those.
Really noticed that growing up. I didn't. I just thought it was a different family, and he was just playing like the dad character. I think that was really stupid of me, but oh well. One thing that I noticed that I thought was really stupid, as I saw listed, was that the role of Maggie, that actress who did it, who played her, Diana Silvers, lied about her height being only 5'8" to get the role of Maggie. And I'm thinking, how do you write a role for someone only being 5'8" because she thought she was too tall? Or
I don't know. I saw height restriction.
Yeah. And I thought the only reason being because the other boy actor might have been shorter. And maybe. I think that's really stupid because who cares? roles for white people now and people that are less than 5'10". Like what the fuck is that? I just want to know.
It was very specific. You're correct. It is very specific. despite being the main star, Octavia does not come into you don't see her until 8 minutes into the movie. And then of course we know all the Alice and Jenny and Octavia Spencer connections and all that. Alice and Jenny is, she is an Emmy award winning with her series Mom. And Octavia Spencer guest starred on that. I don't watch the show.
But they both won Oscars.
Yes, they both won Oscars. But I did want to mention that also the Alice and Jenny Emmy awarded because, you know, she just plays a random character in the background in this.
Yes.
Hilarious. But she does get killed. So I guess that pushes her up to like being like higher status? Because
maybe that's what she was doing too. Killed. Like they asked her, "You want to play like a random person in this movie?" Oh, totally. Play the shit out of that random character. Shove me in a kennel. Oh, weird. After I'm killed, and don't even bother showing me getting killed. Yeah. So, yeah. So, like, what did you think of the movie overall, other than the cringe and the...
The cringe did it for me. I think the everything that made get this cringe factor is what made it for me, because if it was just, like, a regular, like, it had just been straightforward, like, these kids are in my house, and I'm going to torture and kill them. I mean, that's just any movie, but... All the other elements of her being creepy and inappropriate and everything made it like really just made me twist in my seat. I told you, I literally had to get up and put my back to the TV screen because I could not watch what was going on. That's how uncomfortable it made me. And that's why I think that's why this movie worked.
Yeah, she did really great. I think that they did write her really creepy really well, because you're right. Most of the time they don't even bother to show, oh, why is this person a creep? Why is this person, just a pervert? What is with this person? You don't ever see that. You just see the after effects that they're just randomly killing people. They really got into this character and let you know every second of her being on the screen was ouch. Like, man, you know, very. And yes, even without the ending and all that, it was still, wow. Like, they really wanted to let everybody know that this person was just the most creepy McCreeperson. And I think she did really good. I was like, I'm sorry that you were the villain in this movie, because I loved you so much, because I love her. You know, she's remarkable, and just she really did it. I was like, ugh. Yeah. Was there going to be like a second one, or did I just make that up?
I didn't hear that. That would be weird. Or maybe that was
funny. I don't know. I think sometimes you know where you see little blurbs where people say stuff, but it's not going to happen. Maybe there would be like a Maw too, but like a different Maw. They just take that idea Maw. For the creeper just
follow creepers all over the United States.
Oh, what about Paw? What about Paw?
Yeah, that's no, I couldn't. No, there's already too many Paws that exist. I don't want to see that.
Yeah. I think you're way easier to get tricked into the woman's basement than the dude's basement.
Okay. So I did want to mention this. I think it's a little bit of trivia, because it brings me into my World War connection. So this movie appears to have been set in Ohio. There's lots of little things around that tell us it's Ohio. But the movie was filmed in Mississippi. It was, I think Natchez, specifically, but it was filmed in Mississippi. So I wanted to share a real world connection about a real world kid in today's world that is making good decisions. I know that sounds weird, because this movie was so cringy and left me with such a feeling.
Yeah, I have to apologize for that, because I can't not sound like I'm totally cringed while I'm talking about this movie. So please
I'm going to wash it right out, because I want to tell this story about a real life teenage hero from Mississippi. So I'm just going to get right into it. I found there's lots of sources on this, but the ones I'm using today are from ABC News, USA Today, and The Guardian. And so I'm just going to read from these different sources about this teenage hero. Okay, this story... this originally happened on July 3rd, 2022, so just last year. A teenager was hailed a hero after city officials in Mississippi said he saved three people and a police officer over the July 4th weekend after a vehicle plunged into the water. Corian Evans, 16, came to the aid of three female victims after he saw a car drive into the Pascagoula River, the Moss Point Police Department reported in news release. The crash took place about 2:30 a.m. on Sunday, July 3rd. Moss Point is a small city in Jackson County, less than 30 miles east of Biloxi, near the Alabama border. Does that sound familiar at all, that area to you, Alma?
No,
we were stationed.
So.
We were stationed in Biloxi. You never went out to Pascagoula or anything like that.
I am so bad about geography. I'm like, I know Biloxi, Dale. I live there.
I'm very. I used to go to Pascagoula. I know this area. We were stationed. I was stationed in Biloxi twice. We lived there. You lived there, but I guess you didn't pay attention to the names of places. This whole area is very familiar. So as I'm reading this story, it's a really lovely area. I really like it. Biloxi. See, the only thing I have against Biloxi, well, not the only thing, because, you know, the other one, racism, but the only thing that really bothers me about Biloxi as far as actually living there is the intense humidity. The heat and are so overwhelming. But other than that, it really is just a nice, beautiful area. The people are nice, and I really liked being there, except for that, like I said, the overwhelming humidity. Okay, going back to the story, though. Corey and Evan, 16, told local TV station WLOX that he saw the car with three teenage girls inside enter the river after it accidentally drove off the end of a boat launch. Remember, this happened at 2:30 in the morning. It's a miracle that he was there. And I'll get to it later how they drove off this boat launch. But remember, it's 2:30 in the fucking morning. So unless this place is really well lit up, this has so many levels of like, wow, he did that. So the vehicle floated about 20 feet, then began to sink. But police said the three occupants managed to get out of the vehicle and onto its roof. They drove straight under the water, like only a little bit of the car was still above the water, said Evans. And this is when Evans jumped into the river to help. One of Evans' friends also jumped in and helped get the girls to the top of their vehicle. I was just like, I can't let none of these folks die. They need to get out of the water, the Pascagoula High School student told WLOX. So I just started getting them. I wasn't even thinking about nothing else. A local police officer, because remember, he also saved a police officer. Here he comes. A local police officer, Gary Mercer, also swam out to help the stricken girls, but then he got into trouble himself. At one point, Officer Mercer was bringing one person to the shore, but she began to panic and she caused him to go under water. And that's where he started swallowing water, police said. When Mercer started struggling in the water, Evans helped rescue him too. I turned around. I see the police officer. He's drowning. He's going underwater, drowning, saying, help. So I went over there. I went and grabbed the police officer. This is a 16-year-old kid. Okay. Remember, 16-year-old kid, 2:30 in the morning. He's out here just grabbing people and saving the shit out of them. Okay. So the driver of the vehicle, the one that went into the water, told police that she was following her GPS and did not realize she was approaching the water, the release says. So I just want to say something before anybody says that's so dumb. How do you follow your GPS and not know? First of all, sometimes these GPS are going to have you driving in crazy circles and like you think, and sometimes you know where you're going. And so you're like, oh, I know this is okay to go, even though the GPS is saying something else. So sounds like maybe she was somewhat familiar with the area, but for some reason she didn't know she was that close to water. So I know this to be true because I learned how to drive mostly at night. Okay. So I was an old farty. I was 19 when I learned how to drive. And I learned how to drive when I was stationed at Randolph Air Force Base, just outside of San Antonio, on the golf course in Randolph. And on the golf course is a lake. So I had this terrible fear while I was learning to drive around this road, circling the golf course, that I was going to drive into the lake because I could not see the lake at night. It all looked just flat out there. Like it could have been just a golf course. So I was terrified. And I remember, he's my ex now, but he was just a friend at the time too, but this is my ex-husband friend at the time. So, you know, I was telling him like, oh, please don't tell me, please don't tell me when I'm driving by the lake. Cause I thought the lake would be like a magnet and just kind of just pull.
Well, that
me
happens in. When you're learning to drive, when you're learning to ride a bike, everybody just kind of like magnetically gets pulled into that thing. Also, why was this golf course the only place that you had available to learn to drive?
Because it was the safest place because nobody was on the golf course. I mean, nobody was driving around, mostly around the base. And the golf course was the longest road around that area. And it was the longest.
Oh, it was like a road around it. Okay. I thought you meant like.
Yeah. Oh, I wasn't driving on the golf course.
Yeah, I literally thought you were driving around on a golf course and I didn't understand that.
No. No, that's so hilarious. I was not driving on the golf course. No, I was driving on a road going around and through the golf course. Yes, that would have been better too. But so I know that feeling. I know that feeling of driving in the dark. I have horrible night vision already as it is. And so I just told Kenny at the time, I'm just like, just don't tell me when I'm driving by the lake because that's just going to scare the shit out of me. So unfortunately, this poor girl following her GPS didn't realize that she was approaching the water, ends up driving onto the boat launch and into the water. So on Tuesday, the teen and the police officer, the teen talking about Evans, and the police officer received certificates of commendation from the city during its meeting. We are proud of the young man for having the courage to forget about himself and jump into the river, Mayor Billy Knight said. It's not often that you see people put others above themselves. The local police chief, Brandon Ashley, released a statement. The police department and I commend Mr. Evans' bravery and selflessness he displayed by risking his own safety to help people in danger. If Mr. Evans had not assisted, it could have possibly turned out tragically instead of all occupants rescued safely, he said. And that is your happy feel-good story about a teenager from Mississippi. So you can walk away from today's episode having faith in humanity and our future and our kids instead of that cringy feeling that movie left us. So just remember, I like the way they call him Mr. Evans, too. It's just like he's a 16-year-old boy, but he went out there and he's just like, and again, I can't get over that fact that this is 2:30 in the morning and he was able to see and do all this. I would have been like, what people, what? I have to swim from here to there. I can't see shit. What's going on? So that was that, all of that was cool. So that's it. That's my little real world connection.
Yay. I love that. I just feel so much better. So much better. No more cringe. So,
okay. Yeah. Want to end on a good note then and just go out and say, I don't know, where can people find us on the, where can people find us on the interwebs?
You can go to our website, nightmaremoviepodcast.com. Our Instagram is @nightmaremoviepodcast. Our Twitter is @nightmareon5th. That's nightmareon5th. We have the horror movie blog. That's us writing and sharing all kinds of horror shit over on horrormovieblog.com. And our Twitter, which is @horrormovieblog.com. That one got me tongue twisted.
Well, and I make you do all the hard work. I make you do all the hard work by saying all that stuff. I'm just going to say Patreon and buy me a coffee, man.
Yeah, go for it.
If you're able to monetarily help us, put our podcast together and get it out to you all. We have a Patreon, patreon.com/nightmaremoviepodcast. We also have a buy me a coffee so that if you're not into the membership, you can do one-time donation at buymeacoffee.com/nightmarepod. But however you choose to support us, y'all, we really are truly grateful for it. Thank you so much.
And thank you.
And I guess that's it for this week, right?
Yes, it is. We'll see you next week.
Bye.
Bye-bye.
Thank you for listening to Nightmare on Fifth Street, a horror movie podcast. If you like what you heard, consider hitting that follow button and sharing us with others. We also love reviews if that's your thing. And of course, you can always subscribe to our Patreon and on your favorite podcast platform like Spotify and Apple Podcasts. Whatever way you choose to support us, whether it's listening, sharing, or subscribing, we are truly grateful. Thank you so much.